Yeah, Eitan got a couple of pictures. That would be awesome. All right, so hi, everyone. Welcome back to Halacha Yom. So excited to learn with everybody. My hope and goal is to be done by the time the 8:20 football game starts. Not that that should take any precedence, and I was planning on finishing by then anyway. So like, but I'm coordinating with the NFL to really work together with them to the timing. So as we said last time, just a few things. I'm gonna try to. I got a lot of really good feedback from the last one. I'm gonna try to really say exactly where I am on the Makoro cheat so everyone can follow along. Was one important feedback. I'm also gonna give a little bit of background to all of the different people that we talk about. There's a lot of different post game that like we speak about here. We haven't heard of most of them probably. Now you will, but I'll give a little bit of background into who they are so you know who we're talking about and like who like the main characters are when we're discussing these sugyot. I'm a little bit like under the weather. I don't have my voice entirely, so hope everyone can hear me. People can hear me in the back. All right, fine, great. So we start off every time with like a little bit of what we call the ethical section. A little bit of understanding, a little bit more of the basis and the philosophies of Shabbat. I handed out a separate sheet with a source in it. Do people have that? Yeah, everyone sees it. It's by the Pnei Menachem. People have heard of him before. I didn't look him up because I assumed everyone knows who he is, right? Is that true? He's one of the Ger Rebbe's. He was the Ger Rebbe from, I'll tell you which years. He was the Ger Rebbe from 1992, but that's not right. Probably 1192 to 1196. That's probably what I...
Wait, stop it. Ger Rebbe?
Can't be, right? No, it can't be 11. It's got to be 1992. One of these is, it says 1992 to 1196.
Well, so
it's not 1196. That would make him a Rishon. So it's got to be 1992. I'm assuming to 1996. Checks out? All right.
1926 to 1996.
1926 to 96. So a lot longer than we thought. Fine. So he was the Ger Rebbe. And he has an interesting point here that he points out in this over here when he's talking about Shabbat. He points out a very unique aspect to the mitzvah of Shabbat. And I'll read it inside. In that page that we got, that's separate. He says, it's not on the screen right here. He says, Sarik lahashrit et ha-shabbat bebanav ubnotav v'lechanchem l'torah. So he's saying we have to, lashrish is like shorish, to root Shabbos in our sons and daughters and to educate them towards Torah. Right, anyone know, like before we read it from where he says it, anyone know why Shabbat might have a special connection to the mitzvah or the value of chinuch, of education? Any ideas? So he spells it out a bit. Obviously there's like the feeling that Shabbat is like a mitzvah that is family oriented, right? That's intuitive. But he writes that, but Shabbat nitercha ha-mitzvah chinuch mina Torah. It's almost like joined with the mitzvah of chinuch from the Torah. Why? Because the pasuk by Shabbat says, kediktiv, lo taseh kol melacha, you shouldn't do any melacha, ata uvanecha uvitecha. Right, you and your son and your daughter. And you rarely find that by any other mitzvah, the fact that it will combine the mitzvah with the responsibility to I guess, inculcate that mitzvah into your children. But we find that by Shabbat. And so he's pointing out that Shabbat has a very unique aspect, in fact that it's infused with the mitzvah of chinuch. Even connects it to this week's Parsha, not this week's Parsha, last week's Parsha. Last week's Parsha of Ki Tetzeh actually is one of the Parshiot that is most fundamental when we think about the mitzvah of Chinuch because it contains the story of the Ben Sora Umorer. Everyone heard of that? Right, the Ben Sora Umorer is the rebellious son, right? And the Gemara and the Zohar writes that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told the mitzvah of Ben Sora Umorer, he refused to write it down until a secret about the mitzvah was revealed to him. And then he wrote it down in the Torah. And what was that secret? Anyone know the secret of the mitzvah of Ben Sora Umora? Right, the mitzvah is that you have a rebellious son and he's brought to court and killed for being so rebellious. And what's the secret?
It never happened.
And, yeah, exactly. It never happened. Right? Even though we have all these halachot, the mitzvah of Ben Sora, the actual carrying out of judgment of the Ben Sora Umora never happened. Right? So why do we have it? Anyone know? Why do we have a mitzvah in the Torah that would never happen?
The teacher,
what's the lesson? Okay, not to take your parents' money and start a kiddush club. Okay, without their consent. Anyone else? So the Gemara talks about how the whole point of having it in the Torah is just for us to learn about it and get reward for learning about it. But Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, have people heard of him? He's a pretty well-known rabbi, Chabad-ish rabbi in Muncie. And he writes that really the reward that the Gemara is referring to isn't a reward like you're learning Torah, it's a reward in Olam Haba. He's saying the reward is in this world because the mitzvah of Ensor HaMorah teaches us so much about chinuch, about the ways to raise our children, and that's the reward you get from learning about the mitzvah of Ensor HaMorah. He talks about how when the parsha talks about Ensor HaMorah, it says that he didn't listen to the voice of his mother and that he didn't listen to the voice of his father. Right? And he explains that really what you see there is that the mother and the father, they have two different voices. They aren't unified in the approach that they're raising their child. And he explains that could be one of the sources as to why this child was not able to feel that he was not brought up properly. And I think that's really connected to Shabbat, because Shabbat is really the time when we raise children, when we think about raising children and being mechanic children with one unified voice as a family unit together. I think it's one of the beautiful aspects of Shabbat, that it's really found in the pasuk that it's infused with this mitzvah of chinuch and raising children. I know not everyone here has children yet, but nevertheless, it's very relevant. They say that the mitzvah chinuch starts way before you have children, because that's when you start preparing to. So that's just one idea as we head into this shiur about Shabbat. Today we're going to cover a few things. I'm going to start with the questions. And again, whatever you guys say, I'm going to try to argue with you. I think I have some good ones for this one. I think they'll really pique your interest. As we go through the progression of Shabbat, I think the questions are going to get more and more practical. Whereas like last week, we're talking about Kavod Shabbat and Oneg Shabbat, but we start running into real issues as we get into stuff like Shabbos candles and when does Shabbat actually start, things that come up every week. All right, ready? So here's the case. Here's the question. You're in the middle of shul here in the NPR on Friday, and everyone is in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat. And people, like, we do Kabbalat Shabbat here at what, 7 p.m.? Has Shabbat started by 7 p.m.?
Depends.
Now, today, last week, did Shabbat start by 7 p.m.?
No,
it's like Shkia is a little bit later than that, right? We just have Mincha at 7:10. So it's a little bit, Shabbat has not technically started yet, according to the clock. Right, so you're in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat, and you notice that you have a giant stain on your shirt. And the question is, can you go wash out the stain right now in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat? That's my question. Yeah, Sam, hello.
Isn't it when you say Mizmor Shir, Shabbos starts?
So you say, once you say Mizmor Shir, Shabbos, even if it's not Shabbos yet, Shabbos hasn't started yet.
Yeah, I think that's
what you did. Why would that accept Shabbat? Mizmor Shir is just like a parak of Tehillim. Okay, I'm just arguing with you. Anyone else? Yeah, Ezra.
I think if you lit candles and you accepted the Shabbos with lighting of the candles, then technically yes, Shabbos is coming for you. But otherwise, usually it's understood that you only actually are accepting Shabbos when you actually don't.
So you're saying it's when I light candles?
No, it depends when you're accepting Shabbos. Or you alternatively, you could light candles.
What if I didn't think about it? I didn't even think about it. I didn't think about when I'm accepting Shabbos. I'm just in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat. I don't think about these things.
Or I should have thought about it.
Okay, well, I didn't think about it.
Then I guess you have maybe dots when you Shabbos.
I don't know. So we're in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat. Anyone else have an idea? I'm in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat. I'm in the middle of saying, like, Lecha Dodi. And I want to go, like, I forgot to, like, set my alarm. Can I set my alarm now? Anyone think I could go set? Yeah, Bailey.
I was just going to say that I feel like once you start Kabbalat Shabbat, like, even if you're not actively thinking, oh, I'm ringing in Shabbos right now, like, the act of saying Kabbalat Shabbat is, like, enough of stating your intentions that you're ringing in Shabbos for yourself, so you wouldn't be able to.
How old is Kabbalat Shabbat?
I don't know.
It's pretty recent, right?
Yeah.
Anyone know who wrote it?
I mean, like, for us right now, if we're trying to give a practical... If you're giving a practical example, we're thinking of us right now, it's
right.
Been in our tradition for hundreds of years.
So for us right now, like, Kabbalat Shabbat, you're saying, is, like, the way we accept Shabbat?
Yeah.
So you're saying accepting Shabbat is just, like, it could be, like, even, like, a subconscious, like, almost thought, like, oh, I kind of... Like, you don't even have to say, like, I accept Shabbat.
Because meaning, like, let's say, like, here, like, if you're walking from Hartwick to here, and, like, you're already, like, on your way to, like, Kabbalat Shabbat, like, you're not thinking... Oh, like, Shabbos doesn't actually start for another 30 minutes, or like, if it's the winter and we're starting Shabbos early, oh, like, I still have another hour or two. If I really need to, I can go back and do whatever. Like, that's not what you're thinking. If you're going to Kabbalat Shabbat and you're davening, like,
okay.
You're accepting Shabbos.
So what if, like, it's before Kabbalat Shabbat and I come into, like, the Hillel, right? And I didn't start Kabbalah Shabbat. I'm not accepting Shabbat yet. And I run into one of those people who's like literally been dressed in Shabbos clothes since like 3 p.m., right? Learning in the base at 3 p.m. And he says, good Shabbos to me. And I say, good Shabbos back. Ooh. Did I just accept Shabbos?
Big Machlokas.
What?
People say Shabbos on
Thursday. Is that accepting Shabbos?
No.
Why not? It sounds like it's just like some subliminal thought of like even just saying Kabbalah Shabbat. But
there are issues with saying good Shabbos after the possible time where you're able to accept Shabbos. If it's after Plaga on Erev Shabbos, you say good Shabbos that way. There is a legitimate question, is that you accidentally or otherwise accepting Shabbos?
Anyone think that's ridiculous? That even if it's like before Shabbos and you just say good Shabbos to someone, you've accepted Shabbos on yourself. Now you can't do any malacha.
You express your das.
Yeah. Matan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi.
I think, I mean, I'm just surprising. It's interesting that we say Shabbat Shalom before Shabbos, but we don't say Shabbat Shalom before Shabbos ends, which kind of like indicates that maybe like we want to extend Shabbos as much as possible and ask as much of it as we can.
Okay, so there's an idea of like extending Shabbos, which is like part of why we can do this, which is a great point. Any other thoughts before my next question? Yeah, Jack.
Certainly, like a reason of why saying like the Shabbos or Shabbat Shalom would imply some form of accepting Shabbos upon yourself. Like I remember learning at some point in terms of the obligation in Kol of actually saying Kiddush Friday night to get like somebody right. Just taking out Shabbos by saying like good Shabbos would be a form of getting somebody like towards that obligation of like having already started the process.
Yeah, yeah.
But there clearly is some halakhic basis to in some way whatever.
Great.
The current colloquial way of greeting people.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's something we have to explore, that like idea of like accepting what that like thought process of like me thinking something can accept Shabbat. Yeah, Dina.
I think just the last thing, like although Kabbalah Shabbat's like between Minch and Mara is obviously like a real, it's like this is the next day, so
right.
I feel like Mara or Barclay, whatever, like I don't know the exact words for Kabbalah Shabbat, which I guess we'll be learning, but
right.
Like I feel like Mara is a very clear start of
You're taking like a harder stance. Well, what is Kabbalah Shabbat? Like, you can't daven Maariv until the next day. So Maariv starts the next day. So whenever you do Maariv, that's when it should be. That's a great point. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's not Kabbalah Shabbat. It's funny because we're talking about like Kabbalah Shabbat. What does Kabbalah Shabbat mean? It means accepting Shabbat, right? That is what the words mean. So I think that's one thing we have to explore. Another question that we're going to explore tonight is a super interesting one. And that is, what if the entire community already accepted Shabbat? Can I not accept Shabbat? Right? Let's say you're driving into to like Maryland, University of Maryland, and like the rest of the community has already started Shabbat. Can I start Shabbat later? This comes up a lot in camps when people like drive up to camp for Shabbat. And the camps usually take in Shabbat early. But I don't want to do that because like I'm not in sixth grade. So I don't need to like be in bed by 10 p.m. I don't have a curfew. Can you go in later and like start Shabbat later than like the rest of the community? So I don't want to hash. Yeah, you want to. I don't want to hash that one out too much.
I
but
mean, also, it's also an issue in your shalayim because you know, your shalayim is to start 40 minutes before shkia.
Right.
But as far as I've heard, that's not necessarily binding to visitors.
Yeah, you're making a great point.
Even not binding to people who don't have Yerushalmi traditions.
Right. There's a minhag in Yerushalayim to start Shabbat early. You hear like the siren way early. And everyone's like freaking out because like, what? It's like, it's the middle of the day. Fine. That's one more question I want to explore. Here's an interesting one. And I'll tell you guys a story that it comes with. I was once in yeshiva for Shabbat. Anyone here go to an Israeli yeshiva? By any chance? A few people here. So I had an Israeli roommate and he was wearing an undershirt for Shabbat. And I asked him, like, how can you wear like an undershirt for Shabbat? And he responded to me, what are you talking about? This is my nicest undershirt. So, and the true story. Right, I twisted the story a bit because we're talking about Shabbat. It was actually Yom Kippur. But does anyone think that's legitimate? That you can wear, like, what does it mean? Do you, like, if you've met, like, Israelis, they dress differently on Shabbat than, like, a lot of Americans. What does it mean they have to wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbat? Like, is that subjective? Is that objective? Is that, like, I can wear an undershirt into my nicest undershirt? Do I have to wear, like, Shabbos socks or, like, a Shabbos watch, a Shabbos tie? Yeah, Noah. Right. So you're saying it's relative to, like, your own weekday clothes. Do you have to have Shabbat sandals when you go to the beach?
That's a good question. I usually just wear, if I wear shoes, it'll be sneakers.
Like, okay. Because normally you wear sneakers and then on Shabbos you wear Shabbos shoes. But when you wear sandals normally, you just go up to sneakers.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, Dina. Right.
Like some cancer communities, and some people will come to Sharon and be like, oh, haha, like I wore that on Wednesday.
Right.
But like for the people in Sharon, it is their Shabbos clothing, because that's just like relative to what they're normally wearing. It's more fancy and more like Shabbos stick. So I feel like it really is just relative to the week, how you yourself dress during the week.
Right.
To be able to change that and make it more like Shabbos-y.
You bring an interesting point, because it could also be relative to community.
Yeah.
Right? Like, here I usually wear a Sudan Shabbat. I wouldn't always necessarily wear a Sudan Shabbat in Israel, because, like, it's just not as... A, it's, like, a lot harder. But also, like, it's not as, like, common. Or if you're, like, on a Shabbaton and you go to, like, B'nai Brak for Shabbat, like, you might dress differently just because, like, the norms of that community are different. Any other thoughts on that? Does anyone think you have to have, like, a Shabbos undershirt or, like, a Shabbos, like... Like... Every single article of your clothing has to be separate for Shabbat? You don't think so? Why not?
Only the ones that are like showing.
Do you have to have a Shabbos coat?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Anyone disagree?
Anything that like can be like seen from that side. I mean, some people are like anything that is like visible, maybe even socks, they have to be different from what you wear during the week.
Yeah, Shabbos socks are a big thing, right? even in like the whatever, I'm recording this, but I'll like maybe I'll cut it out. Even like the firmer the community you go, like the more like flamboyant the Shabbos socks are, right? I once heard an interesting theory, because that's like the way you like in some communities, that's like the only expression of like individuality that there is, like through the socks. So like you get like bright pink flamingo socks, and like that's like the individuality that's being expressed. And any other thoughts on that? Yeah, Jacob.
One of the ideas by Shabbos, one of the times we've discussed one of the shiurim I was listening to of Shabbos is to have things different for you on Shabbos on both a thought level, a speech level, and an action level. So certainly to have something change for Shabbos would be nice.
Right.
Does that mean everything? Does that mean everything you see?
Right.
Does it just mean I have this one thing special that I only wear on Shabbos, and putting that on is some sort of expression of today's different?
Right.
I don't see how many articles of clothing it takes to like make it feel like I'm wearing something different, or one thing that's very specific to Shabbos, and suddenly everything is.
You're saying as long as there's one thing to remind you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have Shabbos glasses?
No.
No. I don't know. I'm curious. It's like an interesting question. Like, what should be considered Shabbos clothes? The last question that I want to explore in this year, and we're going to like start the topic of Shabbos candles, but it's one of the longer topics, so I definitely won't finish it. But that the question is, where do you think is like the best place to light Shabbat candles? Right, let's say you're with your roommate, right? And your roommate says, I want to light it right next to where we're eating. And the other roommate argues, why would we light there? I could already see there. Why don't we light in the room? Because there's no light there. Who's right?
You're already down a bad path.
Who are your roommates?
Yeah. Isn't the whole point to create a sense of Shalom bias?
How would candles create a sense of Shalom bias?
You can see and do things.
I can see anyways. I have a Shabbos light.
Oh, nowadays.
Nowadays. Well, we're talking about us today. Does anyone think Shabbos candles are irrelevant today?
Or what?
Irrelevant.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
I think the whole purpose of the Shabbos candles were to light them so you have light for Shabbos.
Right.
That, now they do represent bringing in Shabbos, but they're not actually fulfilling their original purpose, which was to have light.
So, given that, and this, I'm going to really get this topic next time, I think one of the big questions we have to explore is, can you use electricity as Shabbos candles? Is a huge question. So that's something I don't know if we'll get to this week, but definitely by next time. Okay, so I want to start learning the actual material for this year. We're going to learn a few of the things that we spoke about in the questions here. I definitely want to hear all of your questions. What time is it? Okay, it's 8:01. We got this. One sec. Okay, so the Siman Shulchan Aruch that we're going to be talking about today, and again, I'm not going to do the Shulchan Aruch inside, and we'll do some of the sources inside together that I'll put on the screen, but definitely not the Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah, because I'm assuming most people don't have one here. But we're in Siman Resh Samech Aleph, which is 261. Right, so if anyone wants to know what Siman we're in Siman 261. On the source sheet, I'm on page 3. right? I'm on page 3, and the first source I'm going to see, although I'm not up to it yet, is source 10, okay? So that's where I'm at. Everyone good? Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch, again, in 261 says that let's say you're not sure what time Shabbat starts, right? You're out in the woods, what time does Shabbat start? You don't know when Shabbat starts. He says that you kind of should accept Shabbat upon yourself when you see like the sun over the trees. Now that's pretty irrelevant today because now we have clocks and we kind of know exactly when Shabbat starts. So that whole Sif in the Shulchan Aruch and a lot of these like estimations about when Shabbat starts don't apply today when we have such exact ways of knowing when Shabbat starts. But the Shulchan Aruch, again in 261 in Seif 4, says that once the entire congregation says Baruchu or Mizmor Shir, it's considered Shabbat, even if it's before sunset. And it's interesting that he says, even if the whole congregation says it, you have accepted Shabbat if you are in the congregation. So not every single person has to individually do it, but if you're part of a shul or part of a congregation, once that congregation accepts Shabbat, you have, so to speak, accepted Shabbat. We'll see some exceptions to that, but that's where we're at for now. Now, since then, we've instituted more parts of Kabbalat Shabbat, such as Bailey said, like L'chadodi came much later. And the Mishnah Brewer writes that in recent times, it's when you say L'chadodi, specifically Bowie Kala, right, that's kind of when you're turning around and accepting the Shabbos Kala, that is when you accept Shabbat. At that point, once you've done that, you've accepted Shabbat. And at that point, you shouldn't do any more malacha. The Mishnah Berurah, also in Simin Katan 28, Chavchet, says that if the majority of the city accepted early Shabbat, the individual has to automatically follow suit. Right? It brings it down halacha l'maisa, which is like a pretty scary thing. If you're like in a city and the majority of the city has accepted Shabbat, if the whole city accepts Shabbat, then so too you've also accepted Shabbat. Now, the Mishnah Berurah writes that the city has many shuls, and not all of them have accepted Shabbat, then you don't have to follow that. So that kind of solves the issue for most of us. Like, even if, like, this shul accepted Shabbat, it doesn't really have much of an implication for me. It's very rare to have a city with only one shul, with a nice, convenient exception, which might be College Park, Maryland. Right? Kind of in this community is a community where there's only one minyan on Shabbat. Versus most communities, you go to Teaneck, there'll be 10 minyanim at 20 different times, and therefore this whole halakha of like, once the community accepted Shabbat, might not apply in the same way. Yeah, Rafi, you look a little distraught.
The comment on that is we're actually fine with that because there are more communities who are not saying Kabbalah Shabbat when we're saying Kabbalah Shabbat. So technically, the majority of the community has.
That's a good point. Right? I would also say like, not everyone in the community sees themselves as part of like the NPR minion. Not everyone.
The College Park, the majority of the Jews in this town.
Right.
Are,
I would say people who are, it's a good question. I think I'd have to like think about that a little more. But like at first thought, I would say like people who see themselves as part of like the minyan community here should accept Shabbat when the minyan accepts Shabbat. If you go to every single Kabbalat Shabbat here, but then to be like, no, I accept Shabbat 10 minutes later, no, you should probably accept Shabbat with the shul, right? But if you don't daven here normally, then maybe not. Yeah, Noah.
Yeah, regarding the like once your community starts qualifier, I guess my thought would be like my parents are part of it. I feel very distant from that shul. I don't feel like it's my shul.
Right.
Like, when they start Shabbat, like, they start at 7 in the summer, which is, like, kind of annoying. Do I have to start at 7?
So, I mean, you have, like, another place to go to, probably, right, in Baltimore? I would imagine so. Like, you think about, the context of when this was written. Like, you had, like, a village in Poland, and there was one shul and one minyan. Like, today this is entirely blown up. It's very rare to have something like that unless you're, like, really... Even if you're like really out of town and like I don't know where, I don't know. Yeah, like there's still like four shuls, right? Or like Memphis, there's like three shuls in Memphis. I was there for Shabbos, so like still nonetheless. But like that specifically in a place like this, or you think like other campuses, like I don't know, like Binghamton, like really, like I don't know how many minyanim they have there.
Two.
There you go. Even two. Yeah, Dina. Yeah.
And I turned on and off the lights, that would be quite rude.
Right.
But if you're, you know, I'm in my home, whereas everyone else, like, went to Kabbalah Shabbat, then how is it confusing that my actions would be important to...
That's a great point.
If it's still not halacha to start a Shabbat.
Right. If there's one shul, can I still do malacha in my home? I don't have an answer. It's a great question. It could be one of those situations where the halacha is the way it is to prevent, like, the situation you're talking about is only relevant. Like, the problem might be someone who's, like, turning on and off the lights while people are in the middle of Kabbalat Shabbat. But, like, it may also apply to not that situation, like, because of that situation. It's something you'll find in halacha often. Like, we don't want that to become the norm. And therefore, this halacha exists. I don't have an answer. I don't know if that's the case here. But, like, it might be the case. I'll take one more question. But then, yeah, Talia. Rina and Talia. Okay, go. Talia. Well, that's why I think when the community says, like, Bo'i Kala, is when they're accepting Shabbat as community, is what we established. Now, here's an interesting halakha question that we talked about before. If you're going to a town where the entire town has already accepted Shabbat, but it's still not Shabbat yet, it's still early Shabbat, and you go into that town, can you drive into the middle of the town on Shabbat? Right. This really comes up, like, often when people drive up to camps. Can I drive up to Camp Hask? They've already accepted Shabbat, and I'm, like, driving through the camp while everyone's, like, walking back from shul. Is that, like, allowed? So there's two... Yeah, Sam. So it could be a Marat Ayin issue, and it could also, like, affect everyone else's Shabbos experience. So Rav Moshe says that it depends why they started Shabbat early. If they started it early because they wanted to have more Shabbat, Tosefet Shabbat, to increase the mitzvah, these sources were left out of the source sheets. I'm going to have them added after. But this is Rav Moshe, in Igros Moshe 338, if anyone's interested. He says if they did it because they want to have Tosefet Shabbat, he says you're not allowed to drive into the new community on Shabbat. You actually have to park your car outside and walk in. That's what he writes. But if they accepted it early because of, like, convenience reasons, like, for them, like, I don't know, curfew's at 10 p.m., so, like, for convenience reasons, they had to make it early, then you could drive in on Shabbat. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach argues with Rav Moshe and says in any situation, you have to just park outside the community. If you're driving in Israel to a community like up north somewhere and like that whole community accepted Shabbat early, you have to park your car outside and walk in on Shabbat. You're not allowed to drive in on Shabbat unless there's like a danger situation. So that's Machlokas Tina of Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Rav Herschel Schechter, Paskins like Rav Shlomo Zalman, again, unless it's like a danger situation. But it sounds like it actually comes up for people all the time where they go somewhere for Shabbat, especially if you're going on vacation and that place has already accepted Shabbat. So just to recap what we just learned in Simon 261, when do you accept Shabbat? Most likely today when you say Licha Dodi, specifically Bo'i Kala, you're accepting Shabbat. But it also says here, if you did not say that, once you say Baruch, you've accepted Shabbat. And also, if an entire town accepted Shabbat, even if it was early Shabbat, you should also accept Shabbat as well. If you're driving into such a town, Rav Moshe says, and Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you should park outside. Rav Moshe has a heter if they just made it early for convenience reasons. Everyone clear on that? Okay. Am I going fast? We're good? All right. The next statement is 262. And this whole statement is about having your Shabbat home set for Shabbat, right? We're in 262, and I'm in the Gemara in Shabbos on source 10 on page 3. And this is the source for kind of like setting up your home for Shabbat. This is a pretty, I hate using this phrase because like it just makes people feel like out of the loop, but like this is a relatively famous Gemara, I would say. Again, I hate using it, but there's no other way to say it, whatever. The Gemara says, and if you look inside, you'll see it on page 3, source 10, Tani Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda Omer. I'm also here on the screen. Shnei malachei asharit malavin lo la'adam b'erev Shabbat. Right, you have two malachim that are escorting you on Erev Shabbat, mi beta kneset lebeto, from the shul to your house. Echad tov, echad ra, one good angel and one bad angel. Like, you can imagine like the two angels on your shoulders, like the whatever. Ukshabal lebeto umatza ner daluk. If you come to your house and you see the candle lit, the shulchan aruch, and the table set, umitato mitzuat. And the bed is, mitzvah means tightened. That's like, it was like ropes back then. Malach tov omer yeratzon sh'tiyaz Shabbat acheret kach. Right, the next Shabbat should be like this Shabbat. Malach ra ona amen. Bal korcho. He has to answer amen to the good angel. V'im lav malach ra omer, if it's not this way, the bad angel says, yiratzon sh'tiyaz Shabbat acheret kach. The next Shabbat should be like this Shabbat, i.e. not set up. Malach tov ona amen bal korcho. The good angel has to say amen. Amar v'lazer li'olam yisader adam shulchano b'erev Shabbat. From here we learn the halacha that a person has to set their table on Erev Shabbat. Af al pish enu tzarech elo l'kazayit. Even if you're not even using your whole table, even if you're not even eating in your apartment that Shabbat, He holds that you have to set your table on Shabbat. You'll often see this in like seminaries and yeshivas where they'll like put white tablecloths on all the tables on Shabbat and the Beit Midrash or whatever. This idea of like setting the table is relevant even if you're not eating there, the Gemara says. The Mishnah Berurah in Siman Katan 4 adds that some have the custom, this is like a funny chumrah, they have the custom to place two tablecloths, one on top of the other. Why? So that when you clear one, there's no time when the table isn't set. Like the second one's already set under it. It's also like a convenience thing. You just like wrap up one, it's already set for the next meal. But some people would actually have two layers of tablecloth for that reason. Another halacha, the Shulchan Aruch teaches in Sif 2, based on a Gemara, that you should have Shabbat clothing that's different from your weekday clothing. Let me see if I have that. No, not here. All right, you should have Shabbat clothing that's different from your weekday clothing. We're going to get into what exactly that entails. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that it's derived from Yeshaya, where it says the word v'chabedito. I'm not exactly sure what that is. Which means you should honor Shabbat, meaning it's part of like kavod Shabbat to have Shabbat clothing. We spoke about last time how there's a difference between onik Shabbat, which is enjoying Shabbat on Shabbat, and kavod Shabbat, which is the preparation you do before Shabbat. And so having nice Shabbat clothing is falling under kavod Shabbat, the preparation before. The Mishnah Berurah even quotes the Arizal that says even like undergarments need to be different on Shabbat. We'll have to see if we pass them that way. And furthermore, even if you're like alone on Shabbat and there's like no Jews there, you're like the only one around, you should still wear Shabbat clothes on Shabbat, he writes. It's like even, it's not necessarily just about like creating an environment or like other people seeing it. It's also just for yourself. Even if there's no Jews around, he writes, you should have Shabbat clothes. Clear? Okay. So there's a sefer called Maaseh Rav. I'm in source 11 now. Maaseh Rav was a sefer written by the Talmidim of the Gra. And it's all about the Minhagim and the Halachot of the Gra. And that's the sefer Maaseh Rav. It was all about trying to like collect all of the Minhagim he had and all of the Halachot he had. And it says, Be'inyan Big Day Shabbat, right? When we're talking about Shabbos clothes, Minhago, the Minhag of the Gra was the Chlif Kol Begadav Mikaf Regel V'ad Rosh. Literally all of his clothes he would change. Everything. And it says here, De'ena kavana rak l'malbush elyon, not just like outer layer clothes, hanir le'inayim, that people see, elala kol malbushim, even like the clothes and under layers. So really every single article of clothing that he would say he would change for Shabbat. Last time we had this person also, the Chuchani, I said I would say who it is. So here it is. The Chuchani is from Nissen Karlitz. He was a dayan in Bnei Brak. He died in, very recently, he died in 2019. He was one of the major postim in Bnei Brak, a dayan, and died in 2019. He wrote a sefer, a big halachic sefer called the Chuchani, and it's used a lot for modern day like halachic like thought. And he breaks it up into three articles of clothing. They're like basically like three like categories, and based on those three categories, that's what you think about when you think about whether or not you need Shabbos clothing. The first category, and Ezra, you were saying this earlier. The first category, I'm not going to do it inside. Or clothing that's worn to give stature or respect, right? Anything that you wear for like respect, that needs to be specific for Shabbat. Think of like a suit or like, I don't know, and like a nice dress. Anything that like has respect, that has to be specifically Shabbat clothing. You have to change it for Shabbat. And if you like I don't wear a suit every day. If I did, I should have a suit specific for Shabbat. If I don't wear a suit every day, then I could just have a suit for Shabbat. Do you see the difference there? Like whatever you're wearing every day, like that, if you're gonna wear the same thing on Shabbat, like the same type, it should be specific for Shabbat. But if it's something you never wear, then like just have that for Shabbat. Does that make sense? The second, yes, Sam.
I mean, you could use it for other things,
so. You could, but like if you're using it like regularly, like a not just for like a kavod situation, like I could also use that Shabbat suit probably for a wedding. That's like another situation of like kavod, right? Makes sense? And the next one, things that are like no respect, like undergarments or like socks, these you don't necessarily have to have special Shabbat clothes, he writes. And the third are clothing that's like protection from cold, such as a coat or a scarf or a sweater. So he says like these clothing, not usually, you don't usually like wash your coat. Like you don't really need a coat for Shabbat. But if it is like something that's like specifically nice, like a really nice coat, then that should be specific for Shabbat. Like people have like Shabbat coats. So those are the three categories he has. He writes that you don't necessarily need Shabbat shoes, but like because it wasn't really a sign for kavod. But like nowadays, I think like people often do like Shabbat. Like shoes could be like more expensive than a suit today, I think, sometimes. Like shoes could be like today, I think, used in terms of like having something nice for Shabbat. Yeah.
What about a kippah? Like
Yeah.
If like a shirt, there's like a lot of room for like, there are very nice shirts and there are shirts that are not nice at all.
Yeah.
Like a keeper, there's not so much like room for like one to be super nice or like not very nice.
That's why I think it's like a little bit like, this might sound a little counterintuitive, but like I wouldn't categorize a kippah as like a clothing that's specifically for like kavod of like it looks nice. No one's like, that's a nice kippah. Like a kippah is like for a different purpose than to like express external, I think, niceness. That, right? You know what I mean? Versus like, I don't know, a bow tie or like a nice sweater. What?
So it falls under the second category?
I think so. I think, right? He doesn't write that, but I would imagine. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. Okay. Bum, bum, bum. So just to recap what we just discussed, and then I'm going to talk about one last thing and we'll finish up. We talked about how one's house, beds, tables should all be set before Shabbat arrives. Learned out from that famous Gemara. And also that one should have special clothing for Shabbat. Some say this applies to every article of clothing, but some say it's only those articles of clothing that require a certain level of kavod. I think I'll probably stop here and just like save next time for Shabbat candles, and we'll get into the different reasons about why we have Shabbat candles. And next time we'll also talk about, let's say you don't have Shabbat candles, can you use electricity? Can you use any old light bulb? Where should you put the lights on? And there's also a very interesting, a little bit of a scary halacha about someone who forgets to light Shabbos candles. Anyone ever heard of that? Okay, so we're going to learn about that also. It actually happened to me and Ricky last year on Shabbos Chol Hamoed Pesach. I don't know, was anyone, Raf, were you there when that happened? I thought we were with some sophomores, and then we remembered about like forgetting to light Shabbat candles. A bit of a scare.
Tamar Jacobson was the one who taught us all that one.
Okay, fine, all right. So I'll tell a story of how it almost happened to us. Happy to answer any questions if anyone has. I'm going to send out outlines of everything we just did. I'll send out the questions and answers. Binghamton wanted to make a Google form of 3 questions every week, and we would have a leaderboard of who gets the most right, and they wanted to challenge us to that. So we could think about challenging Binghamton to the leaderboard.
That's beneath all that.
We don't even, it's different league. All right, we'll think about it. All right, thank you guys, appreciate it.